This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Jeff Drake from the Joneses. You're listening to The Devil's Music with Pleasant Gaiman on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
Pantheon Podcasts presents from Hollywood, California, The Devil's Music with Pleasant Gaiman. You are invited to join the Hollywood princess as she explores her lifelong pursuits in the occult, sex, love, and that sinful rock and roll. Ladies and gentlemen, step into the dark parlor of Pleasant Gaiman as she brings you the Devil's Music.
Hey there, this is Pleasant Gaiman, and you're listening to the Devil's Music, a Pantheon podcast. A little bit about me. I'm a punk rock witch from Hollywood, California. I've had a lifelong passion for rock and roll and the occult that started when I was a preteen. In the 70s, I was one of the first punks in LA, and as a teenager, I worked at the Whiskey A Go-Go, started producing shows, and made a Xerox fanzine called Lobotomy, which led me to write for every major rock publication you could think of. In the 80s and the 90s, I fronted three bands. I'm a best-selling author with 8 books out and more on the way. For the past 30 years, I've toured around the globe to teach and perform dance. You might have also seen me acting or dancing in music videos, feature films, and documentaries. Look for me in the new Go-Go's documentary. To find out more about me or to book a tarot reading, go to my website, pleasantgaiman.com. I'm really excited to be part of the Pantheon Podcasts network of rock and roll shows. Everyone here at Pantheon tells stories about the music we just adore so much, each and every one with a different twist. Find them all wherever you listen to podcasts, at Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Pandora, anywhere you get your favorite podcast fix. And head on over to pantheonpodcast.com to share a show with a friend. Or be damned to purgatory forever. Hi, this is Pleasant Gaiman, and welcome to the Devil's Music Podcast. Today, my guest is the amazing Stacey Lane Wilson. She's a best-selling author, an award-winning filmmaker, and the hostess of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Stacey grew up in LA and was part of the early 80s Sunset Strip scene. But that's not a surprise because rock and roll is in her blood. She's also the daughter of guitarist Don Wilson of The Ventures and so much more. Hey, Stacey, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Pleasant. Thanks for having me on your show, which I love and listen to all the time. So I'm really excited to be here.
Side note to the audience, Stacey was afraid she wasn't going to be sick enough for this podcast.
I know. I got to make up some really interesting stories, I guess.
Now, I'm sure I'll draw one out of you, or one or two or three or four. But Stacey and I met when she was shooting the Ventures documentary because this is still one of my favorite accomplishments. I was a Ventures cover girl and I grew up with those, all of the Ventures albums. And when that happened, I just couldn't even believe it, because for anyone who's listening, the Ventures covered the Go-Go's Surfing and Spying. And in case you don't know that, and somehow I probably through nepotism, I wound up on the cover, and that shoot was nuts.
Yeah. Well, you were on the cover because you're hot. I love that. That picture is so great.
I love it too.
Who took that photo? Now that was Teresa, right?
Yes, that was Teresa Caricas. She's like my main lady photographer over the years. But also, you know that the Kessel brothers, Dan and Dave Kessel, I don't know if you even know this, Stacey, those guns on the cover of it were real guns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they were like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Dan and David Kessel were Phil Spector's bodyguards for a while. And they said it's, you know, we wanted to look all spy like. So I put on that was my own trench coat and stuff. But, they brought the guns in and I thought they were toy guns. And then they started like unloading all the magazines and showing them to me. And I was just like, whoa.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Crazy.
Wow.
But so where should we start with you? Let's talk about your childhood and stuff too, because you grew up fully in LA and I only grew up from adolescence in LA. So I'll listen to your awesome LA rock and roll childhood.
Okay. Well, I was born in Los Angeles, and my mom was a model and a writer. And that's actually how my parents met. I'm not quite sure if my mom is also a cover model. She was on Walk Don't Run Volume 2 with her lime green go-go pants and her tight sweater. And I'm not sure if that's how my parents met or if she got that cover because she was dating my dad, but that's how that happened. And so, yes, I was born in LA and my parents actually separated and divorced when I was still pretty young. I think I was 18 months old or something like that. So my mom raised me and it was pretty, I guess I could say it was a checkered childhood, so to speak, because my mom was pretty wild. And she actually ran away from home she lived in Ellensburg, Washington when she was young. And she ran away from home when she was about 13 years old and went straight to Las Vegas, got a fake ID and got a job as a showgirl and a cocktail waitress. And she met the Rat Pack and hung out with all of them and then found her way to Hollywood. And she was in a few movies, Albert Zug Smith did some movies. One was called Sex Kittens Go to College.
Oh, I saw that.
Lives of Adam and Eve. Yeah, so she knew some of the actresses that were in that and she had little bit parts. And she also did a lot of modeling for pinup magazines. So she was on the cover of magazines with titles like Swank and Wink and Gent and stuff like that. So it was really, really cute cheesecake modeling, though, you know, nothing too raunchy. But she was an interesting role model to have as a little girl, I'll tell you.
That's amazing. My mom was...
She ran away from home and went to sing with big bands in the 40s. And then she wound up like on Broadway. And then later, like went by the time I was born, she was teaching musical theater at a college and stuff. But yeah, my mom's got some pretty good cheesecakey pictures, but they're from like before your mom's. But yeah, that's good. I'm glad we both had kind of wild moms. And then both turned wild.
Well, you know, they say well-behaved women seldom make history. So I got to keep those wild ladies coming.
Yeah, sowing those wild oats. So what part of LA did you live in when you were growing up?
Actually, we moved around a lot. My mom was always a step ahead of the landlord because she was a writer. So as we know, writers don't make a lot of money. So it was kind of feast or famine. So whenever the royalty checks ran out, we would run out on the rent. So I kind of lived in Sherman Oaks, you know, Chatsworth, the Valley. Where else did we live? Yeah, basically the Valley and Hollywood for some period of time. And then we actually, when I was about 12 years old, we moved up to Idlewild, which is a national forest in the San Bernardino Mountains. And I lived there for about 3 or 4 years. And then when I was 17, I left home and I lived in Woodland Hills. And that's really when I got closer with my dad. You know, I did see my dad from time to time when I was growing up, and I got to see a lot of really great concerts through my dad, including, of course, his own concerts, The Ventures, and got to meet a lot of musicians and had a lot of fun. But he wasn't in my life permanently until I got older and was able to sort of be more autonomous and make that relationship deeper. And we got really close throughout my adulthood. And he just passed away in January. So
oh, I miss him. Sorry, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was the last venture standing. So he was 88 years old, and he actually started the band in 1959 with Bob Bogle and was a permanent member of the group all the way up until his retirement in 2015. And me and my half siblings got to go to that tour in Japan to see his last shows. And then he's, of course, kept a hand in the group. He owned the name of, you know, the group and managed that and did some recordings with them after 2015, but he essentially retired from touring. But he did tour for, you know, 60 years, basically, and never missed a show.
Wow, that's just incredible. And then right. when you were little, did you know that, like, your parents were famous or...
Well, yeah, I knew, but it was just kind of part of my everyday life. So it didn't seem like that big of a deal to me.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, yeah, it never does. Like, I can't remember. I heard some crazy. Oh, I read this somewhere. It was like one of Pamela Anderson's kids came home and said, "Mommy, at school, they're telling me you're Pamela Anderson."
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, well, and another thing about kids is you never think your parents are cool. So, of course, you know, I thought, oh, my mom, it's a, you know, a pinup model, and I don't want my friends to see her pictures. And of course, with The Ventures, I, you know, was more of a rocker. So I loved hard rock and heavy metal and stuff like that. So The Ventures were like, eh. I didn't really get a real appreciation for them until I got older. And then, of course, even more recently, when I made the documentary Stars on Guitars, I learned a lot through the people that I interviewed, just how influential The Ventures really were to so many different bands and musicians that I loved. So it all kind of came full circle.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, even in like in punk rock, which one of my old boyfriends says that I always say that, like, as I'm saying, in the Paleolithic era, or
right.
But during punk rock, like, a lot of us were like really, really into like especially The Ventures and, you know, all those, and Link Wray, and just all those like really kind of guitar driven, twangy, surfy sounding bands, you know, because it didn't sound like the absolute garbage, at least in my opinion, that was on the radio back then, you know. in the late 70s. Yeah. It wasn't like Captain and Tennille or any other. It was like really cool music, you know, so.
Yeah, it was, you know, surprisingly dangerous sounding music. You know, when you go back and listen to some of those early Venture songs with the fuzz tone, or you listen to a Dick Dale record, I mean, it really is badass.
Yeah, I got to meet Dick Dale one time. That was really cool. It was at an awards ceremony for music, but I had just, I used to go to Disneyland all the time when I had more free time, and they had just made the switch over from having no soundtrack to Dick Dale doing the soundtrack on Space Mountain, and I was on acid, of course, and it was the best thing I had ever heard. And then I bumped into him like the next week at this awards ceremony, because somebody came up to me, and I had no idea it was Dick Dale, and said, I was wearing like a midriff dress, and whispered in my ear, "You look just like a belly dancer." And I turned around, and then I realized who it was. And I said, "That's funny, because I am a belly dancer." And he said, "Oh, I'm Lebanese." And he started telling me about like working at his dad's falafel stand and all this stuff. And so then we were talking for like half an hour. And then I finally like walked away from him, and everyone's like, "Will you introduce me to Dick Dale? Will you introduce me to Dick Dale?" And I was like, "I don't know him." And they're like, "What are you talking about? You guys are just talking like friends."
Wow.
I know.
Well, it sounds like he was friendlier with you than he was with some people. I think I might have met him once backstage, because the Ventures and Dick Dale did share a couple of bills, but I never really talked to him. But I heard he was not the friendliest person, so he must have really liked you.
Well, I'm sure like the big hair and the exposed stomach didn't hurt, you know. No, he was, I thought he was really nice, but also I'm, you know, I wasn't a musician. I was just being a sex pot at that moment. So tell everybody about the Ventures film. Is it on any of the services that they can see, or what's going on with that?
Yes, well, we had planned a big festival run for it. And of course, that was right when the pandemic hit. So it was a shame, because we didn't get to see it on the big screen all that much. But it did play at Viva Las Vegas a few months ago. And it played in Gig Harbor, Washington, which is right near my dad's hometown of Tacoma, Washington, on the IMAX screen. So that's pretty exciting. But it did actually come out December of 2020. And it's all on pretty much all the streaming platforms. And, you know, Prime, iTunes, Vimeo, YouTube, Vudu, Tubi. So some of those you can even watch it for free with commercials. And it's also on DVD. So it's been really well received, and I'm really proud of it.
Yes. And you've made lots of movies and written lots of books. You're so multi-talented, including like film guides. So like horror movies, right?
Right. Yeah. I actually got my start as a writer doing movie reviews and entertainment reporting for horror.com. And then I went on to work for the Sci-Fi Channel as a red carpet reporter and film reviewer. And I still do that to some extent, but now I'm really concentrating on my books. You had mentioned my podcast, Rock and Roll Nightmares, which is a spinoff of my book series. And there are 5 books so far in the series, and I have several more planned. So it's really becoming a brand of its own.
That's amazing. So are those mostly like about like deaths or rock and roll and crime, or is there also just like horrifying road stories?
Well, it's kind of all of the above. I think with a name like Rock and Roll Nightmares, I have a lot of leeway to do different things. The first 3 books in this series are short story collections that I've written and then also asked other writers to contribute stories to. So those first 3 are dark comedy and horror short stories, all based in the rock world. So the first book is set in the 60s, and it's called Along Comes Scary. And then, yeah, so they're they're goofy, fun books. And then there's a second book in the 70s, and then there's another one set in the 80s. And then the first nonfiction book in the series came out earlier this year, and it's Rock and Roll Nightmares, True Stories, Volume 1. And that does cover the 27 Club and rock and roll suicides and plane crashes and bands beset by tragedy and all sorts of things. Of course, you know that people like Keith Moon and, Keith Richards and all kinds of people, D.B. Ramone, Chris Cornell, all these, G.G. Allen, of course, he's in there. So there's a lot of wild characters in the book, and it's just all the true stories of their antics and lives and deaths.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the 27 Club is so strange with them. If any of you guys in the audience don't know this, because I know some of you are youngins, There's a big spate of rock stars that just all happened to die at the age of 27. So that's a macabre club.
It is really eerie. Yeah, for sure. When you kind of string all these stories together and see the similarities that a lot of these people shared. And it's really interesting to kind of delve into that and see how it became a phenomenon and who might have been the first member of the 27 Club. And it kind of seems to be waning now a little bit.
Wait, was Robert Johnson in the 27 Club?
Yeah, he was murdered at the age of 27.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He might have been the pioneer then.
He might have been. And, and of course he's the one who famously has the legend of going to the crossroads to sell his soul to Satan for his incredible talent. So that's kind of like how maybe the whole thing got started, if you believe in that sort of thing.
Totally. Well, I mean, where Robert Johnson is from, I mean, you know, like when I was down in Mississippi for a while, during the summer, which was not pleasant, pun intended. it was so humid. We were looking for the exact crossroads if we could find it, you know, but no one seemed to really know. But anyway, I love Robert Johnson. But let's take a little break to listen to some music, and then we will be right back. Here we are back with Stacy Lane, and we've been talking about rock and roll nightmares. For your rock and roll nightmares, have you done a full punk rock edition yet?
Not yet. I do have some punk mixed in there. We do have the Ramones in the first book, and like I mentioned, G.G. Allen, of course, is in there. Sex Pistols, of course, Sid Vicious, he factors in both books. I'm currently working on volume 2 of True Stories and go into the, I guess, supposition of whether or not, you know, his mother Mercy killed him. I mean, there's all these crazy rumors and stuff, and I don't really draw any conclusions, but I try to present all the facts and different stories of what could have happened.
Yeah, that's really cool that you're doing that, you know, because there hasn't really been kind of a collection of those kind of stories. I mean, everybody knows like one or two of them, you know, but mm-hmm.
Yeah, there haven't. I mean, I kind of think of these portions of the Rock and Roll Nightmare series as sort of the Hollywood Babylon of rock.
Totally. It's exactly like Hollywood Babylon. And then is that when you're doing the podcast, the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast, which I actually haven't heard, that's available on all platforms, right?
It is on all the platforms. So, you can even listen to your episode. It was one of our most popular ones.
Oh, really?
yes.
So when you're doing that, like, have you interviewed people that are still alive that just had aside from me, that had crazy stuff, or is it just people talking about someone else's death, or how does that go?
It depends. I mean, because I'm still in the film journalism world to some extent, I do get a lot of press releases about rock docs that are coming up. So I did interview Tracy Guns about a documentary that he's involved in about Randy Rhoads. So narrated that. So I had him on the show, and I had Nelson Bragg, who drummed with Brian Wilson for many years, and he also has a book and a documentary out. So it's a mix of horror authors, rock and roll people, musicians, filmmakers. So I try to just kind of mix it up, but anything that kind of falls into that rock and roll nightmares territory is fair game for my podcast.
Were you always into horror? Like, were you a really spooky tiny girl? Like, I remember, I myself started begging my mom to get me like all those old monster magazines, you know, like
Family
Finland, when I was like four. I was obsessed with that stuff.
You know, I really wasn't when I was a little girl. I was really obsessed with horses, and I had ponies, and, you know, my mom got me my first pony when I was six. So I was really, really into horses. But around the age of about six, you know, when I got my first pony, I do remember that my dad let me stay up really late one night when I was visiting him to watch The Pit and the Pendulum, starring Vincent Price. And I just really got obsessed with those gothic horror films, and I loved watching them. And and then I just started reading Stephen King novels and Anne Rice novels and stuff like that when I was younger. And I always wanted to be a writer ever since I was a little girl. I used to make my own little chapbooks and staple them together, and they were different stories, usually had horses in them. And then I started publishing a fanzine, actually, for Led Zeppelin when I was about 15, and I had subscribers from all over the world. So I've always been into the idea of writing and publishing, and I've never really let that idea go.
Let's take a little break, and we will come right back.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hi, I am back with Stacey Lane Wilson. When was your fanzine going on? Like, when was that?
That would have been like in the early 80s. So yeah, I can't even remember what was mine called. I think mine was called Presence. And my friend Peg LaForce, she had one called, what was hers called? It wasn't Tight But Loose, but that was another one that we subscribed to. So we used to interact with fans all over the world and swap newsletters and fanzines and stuff like that. And I had a huge
in the mail,
collection.
Right? In the mail.
Yeah. For your collection. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I still have some tour books. I have a 1969 hardcover Led Zeppelin tour book that I remember, like, I had to write to dozens of people all over the world to figure out who had one that they would sell to me. And I did chores, you know, my mom would always make me do chores to build up my work ethic. So I'd get paid to scrub the kitchen floor and put some money away so I could buy those Led Zeppelin collectibles.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was like raking leaves and babysitting and doing shit to get my first tarot cards. And, you know,
I used to collect tarot cards too. I used to have decks from all over the world. The artwork is just so beautiful on those.
Yeah. They're like tiny miniature works of art. Do you read tarot? I didn't know that.
When I was a kid, I dabbled with it. I was interested in it, but I always had to refer to my book to see what the cards meant. So I never got to be where I was an expert at it, but it was always really fun.
I love it. I've had some wild readings lately. I mean, just wild ones in the past few days.
Oh, wow.
Because that always around Mercury retrograde, which is.
I have found that, you know, I used to write down what the readings were, and then a lot of the predictions did come true, so I'm not gonna knock it.
Yeah, I love it. It's like, it's just the, well, it's not the best thing ever, but it's definitely one of them.
Yeah, but the artwork, like you said, is just amazing. I remember I had a deck of cat tarot cards from Italy, and they were all hand-drawn, and they were from the 40s or 50s.
Wow.
Really beautiful cards. Yeah.
Do you still have it?
I think I might have kept that one. I did wind up selling my collection because I just downsized like crazy, and I sold a bunch of the decks because I was never using them. And I was like, well, they're all in a trunk, you know, if someone should be enjoying these. So I sold some of them, but I still have my first deck, which is the, what is it called?
The Rider.
Yeah, I have that one. Yeah, and then I think I did save the cat one because it was really so unusual.
Will you leave it to me in your will?
I will. Yes. I know you love cats. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So when did you start like hanging out on Sunset Strip? Was that like in the hair metal days?
Yeah, sadly, that was, you know, all we had to do, had to go see this hair metal. I wasn't really on the punk scene. Because I think that was just a little before my time, but I did order a fake ID from the back of Cream magazine or something, and would go to the Rainbow and stuff like that with my obviously fake ID. Always get let in. But yeah, I remember one of the shows that I saw was pretty crazy. It was Wasp at the Troubadour on a Halloween night, and that was pretty wild.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite bands back then?
Back then? I was always more of an old soul. So I listened to a lot of The Doors and Jimi Hendrix and stuff like that. Even though to go see live music, I saw Wasp, and I saw the earlier incarnations of Guns N' Roses. Who else did I see? I would just go to see a lot of local bands, actually. I thought that was always pretty cool to just see unknown bands, because you could always get closer to the stage and kind of follow them. So I just actually read that book that's out, Ain't Nothing But a Good Time, and it kind of goes over the hair metal days of LA, and they interview pretty much everyone from the day.
Who wrote that one?
I cannot remember the name of the authors now, but it's actually not written. It's more of an oral history. So it's just a collection of quotes, which is actually not my favorite style to read, but they really did get quotes from absolutely everyone who was anyone back then. And they told the stories of how they were so, it's kind of like a DIY, not as much as the punk scene, but where they would really promote their bands with the flyers. Remember the flyers that would be all over the telephone poles on the Sunset Strip?
Oh, totally. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and they would have like a street team basically, and they'd have, you know, groupies out there getting people to come to the shows, because it was wasn't it like a pay or play thing, especially at Gazzari's, where if you didn't bring in enough people to buy tickets, the band was responsible to pay for their time up on stage. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was kind of weird when pay to play came in. I remember like all of us were just sort of outraged, and because we weren't paying to play, but just the concept of it. I mean, I can see it from like the club owner's perspective, but you know, like also because I'd booked so many clubs and was in a band and was writing about music, I just thought it was like so weird. It's like, well, then don't book shitty bands. Book bands that right. draw, you know, because there was so many good local bands around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
During hair metal, me and the girls in my band, we used to when we were bored, like waiting to go on, or when we were in the van on long trips, we used to just go through the pages of like some of the LA rock and roll magazines, you know, because nobody had smartphones in those days. So when you were on a long van ride, or like, you know, waiting, you couldn't just be texting someone. But we used to play this game of like we would just open it up. And this was like at the height of hair metal, where there was so many horrifying bands, you know.
Oh my God. Yeah. And the fashions are, oh.
Yes. Yes. But
even
we were
back then, though, we thought it was bad. It's not like you're looking back and thinking, oh man, what were we thinking? But I hated it even back then.
It was terrible back then, but we used to go like this. We used to go, yes, yes, no, yes, no, 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 no. And like, sometimes bands we were playing with would go, what are you doing? And we're like, we're talking about who we would fucking, who we'd hypothetically fuck.
Right. <I don't know. laughs> You should always borrow their clothes and nothing else. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, gosh, the Aquanet stock must have gone up by a billion points back then.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, also like just in the 80s in general, like everyone, even if they weren't hair metal, like we just had so much hairspray on. Like I always tell people that I'm responsible for like at least a 20 square mile hole in the ozone layer.
Really? Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. I mean, back then, like I said, I was always kind of like more into 70s, late 60s music, even in the 80s. And I never did the big hair. I never did the, you know, lace fingerless gloves or anything like that. So fortunately, I can look back on all my pictures from then and look relatively normal.
Normal. My pictures don't look normal, but thank God they don't look hair metal.
Right.
So tell everyone about your book, though. Like, your memoir about growing up in LA.
Pardon?
Tell the audience, our esteemed audience, about your book about growing up in LA. Like,
yes, my memoir is called So LA, a Hollywood memoir, and it's it is about growing up in Los Angeles with my wild mom and my rockin' dad, but it's also a parallel history of Los Angeles. So throughout, if I'm talking about, say, 1977, 78, when I was living in the Valley, I also talk about how the Hillside Stranglers were so active then and what it was like to be a young girl. You know, back then you couldn't even walk home by yourself without fear of the Hillside Strangler coming to get you. In fact, one of my best friend's cousins was murdered by them. So I kind of go into that, and also some of the architecture when I talk about how my mom used to take me to Dupar's restaurant when I was a little girl on Sunday mornings for breakfast. Then I go into the architecture of Dupar's and who started the chain and other googie architecture and things like that. So it's kind of about me, but also entwined with Los Angeles and its history. And of course, being into horror, it also covers the darker history, you know, the serial killers and the crazy things that happened in LA as I was growing up.
Yeah, there was so much craziness. I remember that the Hillside Strangler days. I think I might have talked about this on one of the podcasts, but I got stopped like on Sunset or Hollywood Boulevard. I don't even remember now. By the cops, because I was probably on Quaaludes. I mean, I looked like I was fucked up, and I was wearing a leather jacket and stuff. But that I was getting frisked by the female cop, and they found this giant, but pink, the color of your hair, switched. Uh-huh. And they were like, "Why do you have this? Why do you have this? Are you in a gang?" And I was like, "No, no, no." And they're like, "Well, why do you have this?" And they were getting really like crazy, and I just looked at them, and I was like, "The Hillside Strangler," and then. They both looked at each other and they said, okay, they just let me keep it.
Oh, good. Yeah. I mean, that was a different time. And it, for some, whatever reason, the 1970s really was the golden age, so to speak, of serial killers. And it was a really, I guess, a strange time to be a young girl growing up. I mean, you really, it was kind of psychologically scarring in some ways, I guess, but also it was a time of real independence. You know, I mean, children now, I feel like they're so tethered by technology, and we didn't have that. So that's something else that I talk about in the book too, just what it was like to be a kid back in, what was it, the Paleolithic era?
No, it was really free range, like kid and adolescence, like for a long time, you know, like, no one was like, you walked to school on your own. No one was driving you to school, because also there was like maybe more neighborhood schools. And then just like staying out like late after dark was normal. I mean, also, I remember like in my punk houses, like one of them was on the first floor, and it was not dumb to sleep with your windows open. Everyone in Hollywood was doing that. Like everyone in Silver Lake was, that was just how.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think Richard Ramirez put a stop to that.
I was just going to say, I know that ground to a halt with Richard Ramirez, but
all right.
Yeah, you know, there was so much crazy like Manson stuff going on here too. There was really like such a wild, like I think really at that time in the 70s in LA, there was like sort of more of a serial killer ratio than in other places. I mean, I know New York had Sam, but that was around the same time too. But I don't think there was other ones in New York. I might be wrong.
Yeah, well, Seattle, that also had quite a few serial killers living there. But you mentioned the Manson family, and my mom actually was one of the many paramours of J.C. Bring. So she, you know, has an interesting story about that in her own book, which is called Legends and Lipstick, which I helped her get published before she passed away. But her memoirs are really interesting. And she talks a lot about what the vibe was like in Hollywood among the rich and glamorous after Sharon Tate and, you know, her friends were murdered, and how people bought guard dogs and, you know, installed alarms, and it just really became a different vibe. It was the summer of love to the summer of death, basically.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. I mean, like it was a huge change, you know, like just how could it not be, but especially just like that whole like sort of plague of serial killers was but I mean the Mansons were, I don't know, I you can't even tell who was like the worst of that lot, you know. I'm still kind of oddly fascinated with all of that, like
I think, yeah, a lot of people are. It's just so incomprehensible that you can't help but want to re-examine it over and over again. I do remember reading the book Helter Skelter when I was a little girl, even like at 12 or something. I read that, my mom's copy, and just found it so repugnant yet fascinating. And just to also to look into the psychology and the prosecutorial side of it, the legal side of it, the courtroom, the transcripts, all that stuff really fascinates me.
I know. And then all the girls coming, all the Manson girls going down to the courthouse and sitting out there.
Bizarre.
Yeah. We used to go up drinking in front of Cielo Drive before we'd go to the whiskey. I don't even know how that started, but it was because we were obsessed with the Manson family. Just
Yeah, I was just going to say it is definitely to this day. I know a lot of people are still making documentaries about it, writing books about it. Diane Lake, the youngest female member of the Manson family, released her memoir a couple of years ago, and I read it, and it was just really, really interesting to see how the inner workings of the family sort of happened, the politics within it, and how she, a young girl, her parents just let her move in with the Mansons. I was like, what? She was like 14, I think.
Yeah, she was 14, I think. What's that book called? Tell everyone.
Oh, gosh. You know, I can't remember the name of the book now. I'll have to look on my phone. But yeah, it's really good. It's on Amazon. In fact, I was just recommending it to someone the other day.
Wow. Yeah, that's all of that stuff is just so wild. I mean, that was like, you know, there was like the Laurel Canyon scene but then the Topanga or more like what, like North Valley scene was just so different of the hippie stuff.
So her book is called Member of the Family, My Story of Charles Manson, Life Inside His Cult and the Darkness That Enveloped Us. So it's really good. First person, and it's interesting that she waited so long to write her book, but she has a lot of interesting perspective after all these years. So that's definitely, if you're into the Manson family, that's a good book to read.
Did she get into Jesus or anything like that? I mean,
I don't think she did. No.
Okay, I mean, I was just wondering because that just seems like something that might happen, you know?
Yeah. No, she didn't go from one cult to another. So I guess I don't remember what she's doing now because I read it like when it first came out a couple of years ago, but it's a good one.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Are you working on any like new film projects? Or
Actually, I just had a film come out in February called The Second Age of Aquarius. And it's a narrative film. So it's about a rock star who died in 1970 and his spirit goes into the electricity and he comes back in modern times. So I kind of call it, he comes back through a computer programmer. So it's kind of like Weird Science meets Get Him to the Greek. You know, he's a hippie from the 60s, but he's sort of brought back to our modern time through this computer programmer who's a big fan of his. So little odd couple in there too.
Is it a girl computer programmer?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yep. She's a fan of his. Russell Aquarius was his name. And he comes back, but he can only stay within her apartment. So it's kind of like, that's why I say it's like The Odd Couple or My Favorite Martian kind of vibes, where he's kind of stuck in the apartment. And she's a fan of his, but he's kind of this Jim Morrison type where he's this mystical 60s rock star. And he thinks that women are just there to fulfill his every need. And she finds out, you know, oh man, he's kind of chauvinistic and he's not really the rock and roll poet that I thought he was, but it's all comedy. It's a fun movie. And I co-wrote it with Darren Smith, who is a writer and composer. He did a rock and roll sci-fi horror movie called Repo, the Genetic Opera, several years back. So he's a really talented songwriter. So he wrote a whole bunch of songs for Russell Aquarius, and they're 60s period correct. So we have a soundtrack that goes with the movie too. And it's a lot of fun, and it's streaming everywhere too. It's on Prime and iTunes and everywhere that you get your movies.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a fun. Yeah, it actually was based on a short story that Darren and I wrote. And he's just really got this kooky, crazy mind. And it's really fun to kind of follow his lead when we're writing together, because we have collaborated on quite a few books and stories together and films.
That's very cool.
Two foxes with twin beauties, triple entendre, blue movie, menage à trois, avec foie gras, chic au pairs, got devil derrières.
Chuck your lucky monkey down to Coho Susie, Patrick Honky Donkey, Blue Movie, Camera Frames, Shaggy Mains.
And so, what kind of stuff do you have that's coming up or not all the way finished yet? Do you want to give any like kind of tasters of that?
Yeah, well, I'm still working on Rock and Roll Nightmares True Stories Volume 2. So I'm about halfway through that book. And the chapter that I was working on today was about fire. So it's pyrotechnics gone wrong and rock stars who've died in fires, like Steve Marriott from The Small Faces and Humble Pie. Sadly, he burned himself up in a fire.
He died in a fire? I didn't even know
that. He did, yes. He fell asleep with a cigarette, which is really sad. But there's also some fun stories in there about pyrotechnics gone wrong. And, you know, of course, we have Michael Jackson's hair catching on fire, Ozzy Osbourne, you know, doing some crazy things with pyrotechnics. There was also, of course, Gene Simmons. He's caught his hair on fire quite a few times. So there's some stories
like
that.
Yeah, I'm sure he has.
Yeah. And then, of course, the more tragic ones like the Station Nightclub fire where Great White was playing. And yeah, that's a really terrible story. But, you know, so it's just kind of a mix of all different sorts. And even the fire chapter goes into musicians who were spectacularly fired from their bands. And so it's kind of goes into all different directions. But that book is about halfway done. And then I'm also working on a cocktail book. So it's called Rocktails, and it's different mixed drinks and wine spritzers and even mocktails inspired by music and lyrics and rock stars. And I'd love to have you contribute.
I started writing it the other night. I'll tell you. I'll tell everyone what it is. I'm the Gold Dust Woman. I'm not going to say what the cocktail is, but you can't allow anyone else to do Gold Dust Woman now.
I will not. I'm wondering if there's any Goldschlager involved in that.
I was thinking about doing a thing with Goldschlager, but it's something else.
Okay. All right. I'm excited.
Because I love the way Goldschlager looks, but like I kind of feel like you can't drink it unless you're already drunk, sort of.
Right, or unless you sip it very, very slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. That's coming out in time for the holidays for your cocktail parties. So that will be out. And then I have about, I just keep up coming up with ideas for the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series. Another one that's going to be coming out next year is called Love Stinks, which is the Jay Giles Band song title, but it's about relationships gone wrong in rock and roll. So that's probably going to be a rather thick book.
Oh my God. Yes. That's going to be a giant book. Who can you say one or two?
Well, I'm probably going to, I haven't actually started writing it yet, but there are quite a few, of course. I mean, there's, well, Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee, speaking of Pamela, which we talked about earlier, the fact that they were married and divorced and then got married again, and there's a lot of drama there. But if you go back over, like even just the Rolling Stones, there's like how many children between them? They each have like, you know, 30 or 40 kids from all their different marriages, and some of them even married children. So there's that.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be a really thick book. That's going to be like yes. Encyclopedia Britannica.
No, yeah, no kidding. But it'll be fun.
Yeah, that's wild. I can't wait to read that one. So anyway, are you doing? Do you have any more movie plans?
I did actually regain control of a movie of mine that was shot a few years ago. I was just a hired hand, but the producers got into some kind of a legal tiff, and you know, the movie was kind of in limbo for a couple of years. But the producer that won the film decided that he wanted to be out of the film business, so he gave me the movie. So that's currently being edited by the brilliant editor who did my Ventures documentary, Nina Hurton. And so she's gonna put that together for me. And it's I kind of call it, the elevator pitch would be Panic Room meets Tourist Trap. So it's about a home invasion and sentient mannequins come to fuck with the people that broke into the house.
That is fucked up. Oh my God. That Twilight Zone episode where all the dummies came to life on the 13th floor. Do you remember?
I love it. Yes, that's one of my favorites. So yeah, mannequins have always been sort of a source of fascination for me. So I was really excited when I got to make a movie that kind of took advantage of that. And the mannequins are quite creepy. So I'm excited for that one to come out.
Do you use real mannequins in it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Okay. So when I was little, I used to go, like when we were at a department store, I would go and just like pose and hold still as long as I could in front of them.
Really? Wow.
Thinking that people would think that I was like really a mannequin.
If only I'd known that, I would have had you as a stand-in at least.
A stand-in for a mannequin.
Yeah. Well, these mannequins, they're vintage. So they have that sort of creepy otherworldly look. So it'll be really fun when that one comes out, but that won't be till next year. That's and it's really called scary. Night of the Mannequins. Yeah.
Oh my God. I know. That's so scary. Remember also on that Twilight Zone that all that mannequin shit was taking place on the 13th floor. And then at the end of the episode, the guy that was witnessing it was told there was only 12 floors in that building.
Oh, that was fantastic. Yeah, I love that. And, you know, there's also Maniac. I don't know if you saw that film from 19, yeah. I think it's 80 or 81 about mannequins. You know, this guy, a creepy guy that kills women and then he uses their scalps to decorate his mannequins. And so there's a long history of menacing mannequin movies. So I'm proud to be a part of the tradition.
Are you going to have showroom dummies by Kraftwerk anywhere in this?
I should.
Yeah, totally. That's also, it's a creepy song, especially if there's like weird murdering mannequins around.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, well, this has been really fun. Is there anything that you want to add?
No, I feel like you covered everything and I'm really happy to be able to chat with you. It's been a while since we've talked.
I know. It's that pre-pandemic since we talked, except for you.
I know. It has been a while, but yes, that's about it. Rock and Roll Nightmares, Night of the Mannequins, and that's what I've got going on. So if anyone wants to check those out, those are out and about. And the Ventures documentary, which features Pleasant, is on streaming just about everywhere. So got to check that out too.
Yeah, you guys, that was Stacey Lane Wilson. She's so great. She's got so many good things going on. I just love everything you're doing, Stacey.
Ah, thank you.
Anyway, this has been a Devil's Music production. And I will not see you, but you will hear me the next time around. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Devil's Music is written and hosted by Pleasant Gaiman. Produced by Aaron Alden. All sound design by Jerry Danielson of Busy Signal Studios. And of course, is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at pantheonpodcasts.com. Our social presence is at Pantheon Podcasts on Facebook and Instagram. Tweet us at Pantheon Pods. All songs can be found wherever you get great music. please pick up these important and fantastic tracks. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.